We're talking to Brandon Rottinghouse, political science professor at the University of Houston. This is our continuing conversation on Texas politics, which by definition basically means we can go on forever.
Never ends on this ride. Yeah, this always, rodeo doesn't stop.
Always something. It's either a senator going to Cancun, it's a governor not asking, not telling the Texas Education Agency that he's going to change the policy, all kinds of things. So let's focus on the legislature. We're recording this on the 4th of March. So we have, what, fewer than 90 days left of
official
legislative session. Mm-hmm. And I know House Bill 1 and 2 are on budget, but now we have House Bill 3, which sets the stage for at least a serious discussion on just what a governor can do during a pandemic or an emergency like we had with the winter storm. What's your take on House Bill 3, which was that Dustin Burroughs of Lubbock is the one who wrote that up?
Yeah. You know, I think the underscore of this is that the Republicans are not happy with Governor Abbott and how he approached the COVID situation, especially with respect to the locking down of different businesses and the mask mandate. They wanted more attention. They needed to have more of a say, according to the legislature. So that's something that, you know, governors have traditionally not allowed. They've been very kind of, you know, close-minded about allowing the ledge to be able to facilitate, you know, some of the emergency discussion. So to see this happening is definitely a rebuke by itself. Whether it passes is a different question. Whether the governor signs it is a different question. So there's lots of sort of unknowns right now. But at the bottom line is that Governor Abbott has a political problem as well as a legislative problem. The political problem is that Republicans didn't like how he treated this. They wanted more input, and they might have been able to talk him out of some things that might have saved him from doing some things that, you know, ultimately got him in political trouble. Legislatively, he's got to choose whether he's going to sign it or not. And he's been at least open to the idea, even though most governors aren't. So we'll see how far he goes.
Well, and it brings up the point. I mean, if you want the governor to talk to the legislature during a pandemic, during a winter storm crisis with power outages and water problems, and you have a legislature that is home.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even come into the session until the second week of January, really. What would they have offered? Who would he have talked to? How does this get handled with a part-time legislature?
And that's really the question. In fact, there have been multiple efforts over the past 50 years or so to try to change this. It's been put to the voters on at least two occasions, and voters have rejected it. True. Voters like a part-time legislature. They want it to be small. They want a modest government. And part of that means you're not going to have equal partners when it comes to this institutional kind of dynamic. So I think that, you know, Governor Abbott certainly could have been more engaging with the legislature, especially with key members of the legislature. I think that a lot of them thought that he handled this in a much more dictatorial way than he could have. So I think part of this is just the sort of ethos of the governor, like the philosophy of the governor in terms of how he does his job. It could have been probably smoothed over with a couple of phone calls, a couple of meetings, and you know, just a little bit more communication. That's been, frankly, not a very strong suit for the governor, not just in terms of with the legislature, but with the public and with the agencies. There's been a lot of this sort of miscommunication or lack of communication. So I think this is part of the larger problem, but certainly the legislature wants to do something that at this point they really aren't part of a process to do.
Well, and you talk about the conversations that are or are not held. I mean, the mask mandate discussion on Texas Independence Day, big announcement in Lubbock, turns out that the Texas Education Agency had not been given a heads up on the fact that it was going to be announced. And two or three of the governor's top four COVID people weren't asked what they thought about it. I mean, they've said they weren't asked.
Yeah. I think that in a lot of ways, the governor is out over his skis on this. I don't think you're going to see a lot of buy-in from other agencies. I don't think you're going to see a lot of buy-in from institutions like the church. You see businesses who are scrambling to figure out what to do. Schools, like you say, are largely kind of upholding the mask mandate. So it's going to be confusion. And again, communication is key here. Just another way to be able to tell people what you're thinking, plan ahead. It's a core of how public policy is made. And if you can't do that well, then you're going to have confusion. So I predict, you know, independent of all the health concerns and whatever happens with respect to Texas businesses, that there's going to be a lot of just confusion in the next few weeks.
All right. Now, we've talked about the House and how Dustin Burrows of Lubbock, who basically, I guess, with the approval of Dade Phelan, the House Speaker, mm-hmm. wrote up House Bill 3 that we were talking about. What's going on the Senate side? It doesn't sound like the whole lot of things have even been written or filed.
Yeah, that's largely true. We saw a little bit of movement this week. You saw the some bills are being distributed to committee. So there's some modest movement towards those goals. We talked last week about how Dan Patrick has unveiled his list of priorities. Mm-hmm. He took credit to some degree for the fact that you had both resignations at ERCOT and the PUC. So that honestly is taking up so much attention and so much of the oxygen politically in the room that there hasn't been a lot of time for anything else. But slowly, the legislature will turn to these. So we're seeing kind of signs of spring, some sprouting of bills, and you know, committees are starting to do their work. So it's a slow process, slower than usual because of COVID and because of the winter storm. But we're seeing just hints here and there.
The hints I'm seeing are swarms of robins. I don't know about Houston, but yes. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the robins are swarming like crazy. Apparently, they were like, "Where did this cold weather come from? Feed me, help me."
Yeah, they're confused too. Like the rest of us, right?
So they're right there with the legislature. as the legislature works on things, everybody's really got an eye on the redistricting fight. And we're watching across the country, Republican-controlled legislatures and governors are really pushing on redistricting issues. They're pushing on voting issues. We have the Supreme Court looking at the Arizona case, for example.
I think you see a circling of the political wagons from Republicans. They have been reluctant to embrace a kind of reform that might expand the opportunities for people to vote. They're worried about voter fraud. They have bought into the sort of sense that the Republicans did better or even won the 2020 election. So these kind of mistruths are to some degree permeating the kind of legislative process that we're seeing across the country. Here in Texas, the Elections Committee has in the House been preparing to hold hearings on a few bills that are restraining what counties can do with respect to voting. So we're going to see those bills work their way through. I'm sure that they're going to get really far in the process, assuming time permits, and I'm sure the governor will sign it since he put that in his list of priorities.
Right.
In terms of redistricting, that's going to be a little bit longer. The problem is that the Census Bureau is not going to release the data file that the legislature needs to be able to complete redistricting until September. So we're looking at an extended legislative session. We're looking at a special session there. So that's going to be ruining a lot of people's falls who otherwise might be doing other things. The ledge will be in session doing redistricting work. And that's a lot of hard slogging work.
You follow the voting laws. You look at the political science aspect of this. I have to ask you, where does this, it seems like almost absolute belief in voter fraud mm-hmm. come from?
I think that it is overblown. I think that's what's really happening. So it does happen. You do see these moments, and you do see voters committing fraud. You see people.
Oh, Starr County, Texas, used to be infamous.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. At least blatantly so. We're not counting people in alphabetical order or ballot boxes. But people do still commit these kinds of crimes, and the AG investigates them. In fact, they've got a whole team of people investigating these things. So I don't think it's the case that either it happens or it doesn't happen. It's the degree to which it happens. And Republicans just believe that it's a bigger problem than it is, at least rhetorically. And then, of course, once you amplify that through various media sources, you start to see them believe it more and more. So once you repeat that kind of falsehood or half-truth, it becomes truth. And that's, I think, where it got rooted early on. And now it can't really be undone. And it's been used as the basis for all kinds of laws that might otherwise restrict who can vote.
I'm also interested in the fact that, I understand that every state gets to set its rules, and I understand that that's the system that we have. It also allows for a system where in one state, absentee ballots are absolutely fine, no problem. In another state, if you even say absentee ballot, you're purged from the rolls. And I think that there's even something in the U.S. House of Representatives now that the Democrats have come up with. I have not read it, but I understand that it's looking at the idea of saying, okay, everybody needs to have 15 days is that the only way to handle this? Because it's such a hodgepodge.
It is. The kind of patchwork of laws creates confusion for people who move from one place to another. And that's definitely something that, you know, is a disadvantage to federalism. And obviously, you know, there are other advantages, but it does create some confusion. The Democrats did just pass a voting act that does effectively try to systematize some of this. It's probably not going to pass the Senate. And so as a result, we're not really going to see much change. Right. And we're still going to allow for states to make these calls. The Supreme Court has more or less sanctified the ability for states to do this. So I think that the best hope of reform is to elect people who want to make reform. Mm. That's the only real way, because otherwise the courts have said states can do it and the federal government can't find a good lane to be able to occupy that would satisfy every kind of voting issue that might be on the table.
All right, we have House Bill 1 budget, House Bill 2 budget, House Bill 3 about the governor versus the legislature. Next week, we'll talk about 4, 5, and 6, maybe.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.